You're listening to The Cumberland Road, and I'm your host, TJ Melanowski. The following is a faith conversation with Carissa Welch, a seminary student and a member of Covenant Cumberland Presbyterian Church in Oklahoma. Carissa was raised in a different environment than myself, and I was interested in hearing her journey. She comes from a fundamentalist Christian upbringing, where clothing, food, and intake of anything considered worldly was measured with suspicion, and perhaps even evil. Carissa's experience can serve as a cautionary tale, a warning that the Christian faith can be manipulated into a form of mental bondage. A conversation with Carissa has me reflecting on what faith in Jesus Christ can be. For me, faith in Christ is an invite to the experience of God and to new possibilities. To live, to love, and to be. I hope to have more faith conversations like this in the future. Here is the faith journey of Carissa Welch. So do you come from a big family or a small family? How many siblings do you have?
I have got seven brothers. I'm 34. My big brother's going to be 36 next month. And I have brothers that just stair step all the way down to 14 years old. So, yeah.
What is a household like with that many children? Is there places to hide when you were growing up? Did you have space of your own?
Well, I mean, I was the only girl, so I got my own room. But it was definitely like a race to the bathrooms in the morning to see who could get in the shower when there was still hot water. there's always like, you know, random wrestling matches going on in the floor. It was kind of a mess, but it was fun. It was fun. We worked through a lot of interpersonal problems.
This sounds like a silly question, but how did you get from A to B? How did you get to the store or to church? Does everybody fit in one vehicle or do you have to take two?
I learned how to drive in a 15-passenger van. Driver. It was not a good experience. But now I get in a car and I'm like, oh, this is easy to drive. I can get this anywhere. I can fit in any spot with this thing.
Okay, so you did the big van. You did the 15-passenger van.
Yes. Yes, we did. And then on long trips, because there were so many benches, she would make sure there was a space in between every two people so that there were no fights in the van on the way to our destination.
Well, did you label your family van? Did you like put on the side of it your family name or?
We didn't.
Okay.
We should have done that. That would have been a good idea.
I know. I'm asking jokingly. Most people don't do that, but it would be kind of neat.
Oh, man.
You could have made up some band name or sports team name.
We could have. We were a band. We all played instruments. So we definitely should have done that. We missed an opportunity there.
So what was your upbringing like? Was your household, did you have faith, you know, Christian faith or?
Yeah. My dad was actually, he was a pastor. Well, when I was a little bitty, he was a missionary. My parents met when my dad was teaching in a Bible school. And then they got married. We moved overseas. Then we lived in Singapore for 5 years and then came back and he immediately started pastoring. And so you hear the classic stories of like the pastor's kids, you know, being crazy. And but that really wasn't us because we were all terrified. We were all scared to death of going to hell. And so we were pretty lined out. We were some pretty straight-laced kids for the most part. But we definitely, there was this really odd mix of faith in that we were so scared of hell, but we saw really real experiences around us the whole time. Like we knew that God, that my dad really loved God. We knew that he loved the Bible. It was a really honestly confusing experience to watch kind of those two things at the same time. Like this man who talked about like a really, you know, really loving relationship with God. And then also we're just, you know, we're terrified all the time of God. It formed a lot about us in our early years, I think.
What were those tensions like? Because I would imagine that you have the tensions of loving God, but also being fearful, but also kind of the viewpoint looking at the world is a wonderful place, but also something that has evil or things to be feared. Mm-hmm. Did you grow up in that kind of environment that, I mean, it's kind of a dichotomy, love, but yet hate, fear, yet, you know, compassion. That can mess with a kid's head. It can mess with an adult's head. Did you have an experience like that?
So what you're saying about like the world just looking evil, it was like every decision in our lives was made kind of trying to be protective. So like we were homeschooled because of influences that could be in public schools and teaching that could be in public schools. The things that we would watch at home, like, I mean, cuss words are like, like definitely don't murder anybody. Also definitely do not cuss.
let me interrupt you for a minute. So how were those television shows, movies, how were they curated? Like how did they say, these are the movies that are approved, these are the ones that are not approved?
We had resources. There are websites that will do reviews and kind of tell you everything that's in a movie. We had this thing called a cuss box that you would plug into your TV. And
yes. See, I didn't want to lead into, you know, my question was loaded. I've heard of those. I've seen those.
Yeah, we had those.
Okay.
We had that. It would mute the show every time there was a cuss word. And I mean, you know, there were some movies that, you know, once you get to a certain rating, we're just not even going to try to watch that. But everything was done in mind with like the world is a scary, bad place and you don't want to interact with it very much. Mm-hmm. And so also when the world is a scary, bad place, it's a lot easier to talk people into theologies that are supposed to be protective, but are really just, really restrictive and sometimes outright abusive. Mm. So, you know, we were homeschooled, and then also I was the only girl. So I saw a big difference between how I was allowed to kind of move around in the world and how my brothers were allowed to move around in the world.
What were the differences?
Well, here's an example. I remember one time I was talking with my dad about something and I was really upset and like trying to make my point. I remember him going, "Carissa, you are always going to have to submit to somebody because one day you're going to be married and you're just going to have to submit to him. So you might as well just learn to submit now." And I just remember thinking, what about this guy? what about my brother? Like that can't be a good reason for telling somebody to just listen without thinking through something. Like it can't just be that for the rest of your life, you're going to have to listen to somebody else. Hmm. And I didn't even realize then where that teaching had come from. I'm sure a lot of people have watched Shiny Happy People. We were not IBLP, But my dad was really influenced by the IBLP teachings. There's this whole teaching about the umbrella of authority, and it's Jesus at the top, and then it's the dad, the husband, and then the wife's under him, and then the kids are under that. And it's kind of, again, it's supposed to be protective because everything's scary, everything's dangerous. And so you're supposed to have like all these layers of protection, but
For our listeners, like before we had this conversation, one of the homework assignments I had was to watch a documentary on, I think it's on Amazon Prime, called Shiny Happy People. Mm-hmm. And it's based upon a family. You'll have to help me. The
Duggars.
The Duggar families. There was, had like a reality TV show on TLC, Discovery mm-hmm. Channel. All this missed me. It just wasn't a television show I was interested in. But anyway, for perspective, they were and are part of a Christian organization called Institute in Basic Life Principles. Mm-hmm. And it's a Christian organization that has been around for quite some time. I think 1960, 61, somewhere pretty early. And so anyway, one of the principles talks about the umbrellas. There's different things that fall under an umbrella. And I know after watching the documentary series, because like umbrella would be something that I would talk about, like, oh, we fall under this big tent or this big umbrella.
Yeah.
I don't use it anymore after watching that. But at any rate, so this is a Christian organization that your family was familiar with or aware of or.
Yeah. My dad would host the conferences every once in a while at his church. And I think he and Bill Gothard are both from Illinois. And that, so he probably was exposed to his stuff, pretty early on, just the circles that he was in. So I grew up influenced by the teachings of that without even knowing that's where it came from.
How detailed is the Institute in Basic Life Principles in the day-to-day life of a member? Like how deep does it go? I mean, beyond just saying, I would imagine this is, you know, Carissa, be a good person, be polite to the people that you encounter. I mean, is it that superficial, or is it more like down to like the socks that you wear, like the color of it? How detailed does that get?
I remember we had like big folders of all of these teachings from the Institute. And it was like, there was a little pamphlet for everything. There were pamphlets for how much sugar you should eat.
Yes.
There were pamphlets, definitely about like authority, and it touches every area of life. And even the way that played out, I've had conversations now as an adult where I realize like, oh, you're in, all of your things don't touch each other. Like in my brain, when I'm talking about clothes I wear, or at least up until a few years ago, if I'm thinking about clothes that I wear, I can't think about that without thinking about my faith. If I'm thinking about what I'm eating, it's hard to think about that without assigning moral judgment to it. Everything in your life becomes a moral decision. And that is exhausting. It is, I mean, just, it's bondage. It is mental bondage to everything in your life carrying so much weight that it's, you know, what you're going to put in your mouth is going to take you further away from God or closer to God. Wow. Or everything became a life or death decision, everything. And I saw that play out in my life, in my brother's lives. Just everything was, it was almost like religious OCD. Like you can't think a thought about anything without thinking, am I breaking a principle here? Am I defying authority here? It was emotionally taxing, to say the least. mentally taxing emotionally.
So these different scenarios from what you eat, clothing, decision making, are these measured against, from your experience, are these measured against like the rules from the pamphlets and the teachings from the organization? Or is this more welled up from God will be angered? You know, where do you think this is, you know, looking back? I now know that you're no longer a part of that. And I don't want to jump to that part of the story. But, you know, where are these measurements coming from? It's hard for me to wrap my brain around. I mean, the sense of guilt and things like that. I mean, I think that covers any faith perspective. You know, it's not just, you know, some narrow sect or organization. You know, it's in Christianity. I think it's in other faiths as well. But that can also be so stifling that there is no room for growth.
Yeah. So while we didn't follow everything from the IBLP pamphlets, that central teaching of authority, in Shiny Happy People, there's this statement made that every father becomes their own cult, the cult leader of their own home. And that's kind of what it was. So yes, there were some standards set up from IBLP. And I didn't have to wear dresses, but I definitely had a modesty code that I had to follow. And it was pretty strict at some points in my life, and it would change because when every dad is the cult leader of their own home, then every home kind of gets their own specific rules according to whatever the dad thinks. And so my dad kind of, we had influences from IBLP, but then we also had influences from like a Pentecostal holiness background. So, you know, we didn't watch a lot of movies. Depending on what his feelings were at the time, that would determine what we were or were not allowed to do. So sometimes he might be feeling a little freer and we could suddenly watch a couple movies. And then all of a sudden he has a conviction that changes. Then we're like, you know, back to nothing. Like at one point we could watch The Lord of the Rings. And then at one point we couldn't because there's a spirit of fear that is, you know, it's just kind of very subjective. So we didn't have to follow everything that was in the IBLP, but we absolutely had to follow and kind of always be thinking through what would dad think about this. And so as a result of that, you don't learn to reason through things for yourself. You don't learn to listen to the Holy Spirit for yourself. And I understand that at some level, like, yes, a dad and a mom together, not just the dad and the mom are there to help guide the kids, but it takes it to a different level where you truly don't learn to think through things critically until you're older.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, listening, you know, there's a distinction between God and a parent. For me, as a child and as a youth, you want to please your parents, mm-hmm. but my parents weren't God. So it seems like a strange environment, as in, did you, you know, growing up, did you have a relationship with God, and could you envision a relationship of faith without your parents? Because to me, that seems like a biblical principle in terms of, you know, having, what do they call it now? Like a generational faith. Oh, my parents went to church, you know, they were people of faith, so I'm a person of faith because of that. This is like the other end of that same spectrum, though, I would think, is I have a faith, but it gets channeled through the approval rating of a father or mother figure or both.
Yeah. So how that played out in my life was, again, I know my dad knew God. I know that whatever things were given to me, whatever, all of the baggage that I may have, I know that he loved God, and I know that I saw things in his life that I know were the work of God. And so I saw that and I really latched onto it. And I was like, I know that's possible. I know I can learn to know God. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't. I couldn't at home because of exactly what you're saying. If I thought something about God, I had to make sure it lined up with what Dad thought about God. If I needed to make a decision and I needed to decide, well, is God leading me to do this? Would this be a good decision? Even in college. So when I was over 18, I couldn't make a decision without thinking, well, he's my authority. So if he doesn't think this is right, then it cannot be God's will because he's my umbrella of protection. And so, yeah, I was scared to do anything or think anything or believe anything that did not line up with what he thought.
There's a difference between a teenager, young adult going to their parents for kind of counsel and advice. Like mm-hmm. in college, you know, I mean, some families are tight. You'd be like, hey, this is the classes I'm thinking about taking so that I can get, you know, move towards degree X or Y. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you get feedback that way. But what you're describing is that this is different.
Yeah, it was on another level. For instance, I have, think about just going to a trusted friend now. Like, I feel like that's probably how most adult kids would go to their parents is like, I know you've lived a lot of life. I value your opinion, mm-hmm. but you're right. It was not that. It was, if he doesn't think this is the will of God, this is not the will of God. If he doesn't think this is a true belief about God, this is not a true belief about God. And so, yeah, I got married at 24 and lived at home until then. And only, I think I lived outside of the house for like a month before I got married because my family moved away. And so I moved in with a friend until I got married. But until then, I didn't even start to be able to kind of have my own relationship with God, you know, that was not totally dependent on him. And goodness, thank Jesus. I married a man who did not, he didn't buy into any of that. Like there was no, if I told him he was supposed to be the umbrella, he'd be like, what? there was nothing in him that wanted to direct me in that way. Or, he's the man with the least control issues I've ever seen in my whole life. So that was really healing for me. I was finally able to start thinking through things for myself.
Mm. So looking back into your childhood, teenage years up until 24-ish, mm-hmm. what were some of the takeaways that made Carissa who she is and has informed your decision-making going on in your life? And these could be, I don't know, Christmas memories, birthdays.
So every Friday night we would have game night, with just a gaggle of people.
Like board games?
Yes. Every Friday night was board game night. And me and my brothers would sit around with my parents and we'd just play games all night. And it was like just such good team building. Uh-huh. That's still one of my favorite things to do is play board games because of that.
Were playing cards. Were playing mm-hmm. cards acceptable?
Yep. Yeah, they were.
Okay.
Yep.
What a liberal household you grew up in.
Yeah. And then also, this one's a little abstract, but my dad loved learning. And I really picked that up from him. Like I was laughing at myself the other day because like I'm sitting at my desk right now and there are just stacks and stacks of books. And I like just the how nerdy he got about word studies. And that was just always a thing in our house. Like we were always learning something. And I I'm so, so thankful for that.
Did you have theological discussions in the household? I mean, being in a minister's family and being in a pretty good size family in terms of numbers, did you guys have like theological discussions about what the biblical text was talking about that maybe weren't necessarily like teaching elements of like, this is who you should be, this is who you should behave, but like the meaning of the text and how it speaks to the people in the household?
I mean, we would have like periodic family devotions, and my dad was just very didactic in general. So yeah, he would talk about, you know, different passages with us, and we'd have to do like memory verses together. and then, you know, every Saturday night he'd be sitting at the kitchen table writing his sermons. He'd been writing it all week, and he'd be wrapping it up on Saturday night. Mm-hmm. And so he'd kind of like preach a sermon to me and I'd get to give, you know, feedback, like explain this better. How does this work? So that was cool too. So yeah, everything was a teaching moment all the time.
Well, that's a value moment, as in,
yeah,
you know, if you're practicing your sermon that way, you're asking for input, and that's a hard thing to do.
yeah, it is. He would write out his sermons almost like word for word, but then he'd kind of get up and give them, not memorized, but he just knew that he knew it well enough at that point that he could do it without looking at his notes much. But yeah.
Well, how did your growing up years and kind of, you'd mentioned earlier about fear, making mistakes were some of the terms that you use. How did this not just completely turn you off to the Christian faith?
So,
because it didn't seem to be much of a gray area. You're either all in or not at all. And it doesn't seem like there's like any room for doubt.
So doubt is actually a big part of my story. Like I said, I moved out at 24, got married, and we were in a couple different churches that I worked at on staff. And I actually was going to go back to school. I thought I wanted to be in counseling because I had met this woman named Karen Turner, and she became like a mentor to me. And she was amazing. And she saw the brokenness in me before I even realized how broken I really was. And she was able to sit with me in that and show me a picture of God that I hadn't seen before. And was really able, she sat in the darkness with me and then walked out of the darkness with me. And it was, I mean, so transformative just to my emotional health and, you know, just a lot of trauma responses I had. And so I was like, well, I want to do that for somebody else because that everybody needs that, whatever that is, everybody needs that.
When you and Karen met, did you know, was there a place, was there a moment of, wait, the Christian faith can be different than the way that I was raised? And was that a jarring moment? I mean, that what was that like?
So again, I hadn't been able to really think through things for myself that much. And so she would say, I would say something and she was like, well, Carissa, what if God is actually like this? And I would just have to sit there with it and be like, wait, have I just thought something wrong about God my whole life? And he's actually a lot different than I think he is. Because I thought he was good, but I think maybe that didn't show up as very good in my life. And so she would always have a different way of looking at what God might be doing in my life. Like I'd be thinking, oh, he's trying to teach me a lesson. She'd be like, well, what if actually this is what you're supposed to be learning? And it was never like as harsh as I thought it would be. It was never as legalistic as I thought it should be. Like it was just this whole world of freedom. Just absolutely rocked my brain.
Was that scary?
It wasn't then. It got scary later on. It was at that point, she saw wise. She's a really wise woman. And so I think she met me where I was, mm-hmm. and she knew that I wasn't quite ready for some of the stuff that was to come. But yeah. So I'm thinking, well, I need to become a counselor. And so I'm signed up for these classes, or I'm in the process of signing up for classes, and I'm sitting at my computer one day and I can't push the button to register. And I'm just sitting there thinking, like, God, this is so much money. This is so much to put my kids through, so much work. I really need to know, like, is this a good direction for me to be going? Because in the back of my brain, I think I'd always had like seminary as something I wanted to do, but I'm, you know, in a little town in Oklahoma. And I was like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do as a girl with a seminary degree? So I was like, I just really need to hear from you. And I didn't tell Karen that at all. And 2 days later, she texts me just out of the blue and says, I really feel like you're supposed to be at seminary. And so I was like, well, okay, there it was. And then I had another conversation like the next day where I'm telling my friend, another friend of mine, this story. And she told me, Carissa, I was just thinking last night, seminary really makes sense for Carissa. And so it was just really good confirmation that that's what I was supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And that's where everything really started. Is I get into seminary and it's, you know, amazing. And I'm learning all these different, just all these different perspectives across all kinds of different denominations. And I just kind of start to realize, wait, I had a very narrow exposure to what the faith actually could be. And so for me, because so much of my faith had been fear-based, like making sure I believe the right thing so that I don't go to hell, making sure, you know, everything was fear-based. Mm-hmm. So then I get into a theology class and he starts talking about, you know, different things that people believe about salvation. And I just... At first it was freeing, honestly, because I was like, wait, I'm free to think other things than I thought. But as I kind of unwound that ball, I got to a place where I was like, wait, I've unwound this so far that I don't know what's true anymore. And I don't know how to choose what's true because I've never had to sift through it for myself before. I see things about God, like in the Old Testament, that are really hard for me to accept. And I don't know what to do with that. So kind of just this huge convergence of like, there's more than you thought. And here's some really bad things that you've thought. And there was just kind of this big explosion of like, I don't know if anything about this is true anymore. And that was terrifying. Mm-hmm. Again, just because always in the back of my mind, what about hell? What about hell?
That divergence of moving from the novelty of being exposed to different ideas, mm-hmm. which may not have been a real threat to your current faith. But when you started doing some self-reflecting of like, okay, I was raised and I was taught one thing, and now mm-hmm. I'm in this environment that is pulling back some other layers of being able to view my faith, views of God, views of salvation, that is where the jarring moment is. Well, what do I believe?
Yep. Yeah.
So how did you handle that?
And not very well at first. It was pretty bad. It was really rough. Well, I always had Karen. And that, goodness, the things that woman had to go through with me. The thing that she kept saying to me was, Carissa, I trust God with you. And so I had that as my bedrock the whole time. So I didn't, I got to some pretty depressive states, and I got to some really anxious states. But because I just had that like echoed in my brain over and over, like, I trust God with you. I was able to latch onto that. So like, okay, God, whatever you're actually like, whatever is actually true, I think I can trust myself with you. And I think I can trust that even though I'm like in a whirlwind right now, I think I trust that you're taking me somewhere.
That's a big shift between just appeasing a God through your achievements and behavior to really letting go and looking at the present and the near future and going, I have no idea what it is. That where my conduct, good or bad, has minimal bearing. That's a big, that's a pretty big leap in terms of a belief system.
And you know, when I look back, it is, it's a huge leap. And I think maybe the little bridges that took, that were there to make me able to take that leap were that just over those few years in between, like, you know, 24 and 34, there were moments where I would be confused about something and I'd have a very specific question. And it's like a source would come to me, like a book maybe, or like a, you know, random quote on Facebook. And it's just like over and over, he would confirm something. God would confirm something. And I, even though I wasn't like, you know, hearing an audible voice or something, like I knew he was talking to me. Mm-hmm. I knew he was trying to let me know, hey, I'm going to get you information that you need. And so there were enough of those that even though I still had an image of a very harsh God, I knew he was with me. I knew he wasn't going to just, whatever my questions were about my faith, I never doubted that there was a God. I maybe doubted how good he was. I maybe doubted how you actually interact with him, but I never doubted there was a God. And I, even in the middle of the swirl, because of all of those little moments, I was like, okay, you're still going to communicate with me. You're still going to get me information that I need, even if I have none of it right now. So that was probably, and looking back, I can see those moments really clearly.
There's not a pamphlet for every question.
No, there is not. And it's not, definitely not an IVLP pamphlet for every question. They tried though. They made a good effort. Mm-hmm. They made a really good effort at it. But
why seminary?
Well, I kind of talked about how my dad was really didactic, and that was kind of how I connected with him was I just love learning. And also these little moments that I've had along the way, anytime I get, just because of the way my brain works, anytime that I get really depressed about something or really anxious about something, normally I'm just misunderstanding something, or there's just some piece of information that I need. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, I wanted to be in a therapist because I wanted to help people out of that, the depression, the anxiety, and just like the brokenness that we all live in. And I realized for me specifically, that a lot of times that just comes with good teaching. That just comes with good information. Like that's what helps me out with depression or the anxiety. And that may not be the same for everybody, but just very specifically me, I don't know in what setting, but that's how I want to help people, is give them better information about God, about what he's really like. But I didn't want it to just be all my ideas. That'd be a bad idea. So seminary makes sense to me right now, even though I don't know specifically what I'll do with it yet.
Boy, those words have weight, you know, to not become what has pained you or that you despise or that have moved away from, that full circle of repeating. You know, you see it like an abuse, maybe drug addiction, but maybe that doesn't have to be, you know, that extreme. It can just be a play on power, you know,
Yeah.
Expanding the reach of your role and your responsibility and maybe even your calling beyond what you're actually called to do. Wouldn't it be much easier, Carissa, for you to just tell me what to believe?
Yeah. You know, so another, you know, this is the Cumberland Road. So part of my story was that right in the middle of all of this confusion, I wound up in a little Cumberland Presbyterian church in Ada. And I would go to this Sunday school class, and there were all of these people in there that all thought different things. Like, there was so much room to just think. And I had not, I'd been around it with Karen, but I hadn't been around it with anybody else. Like, there's just room for everybody to be working through their process with God in their own way. And that absolutely changed me.
Yeah, because you went from one individual to an actual community.
Yes, yes.
How did you find the Cumberland Presbyterian Church?
Karen was already going there. She had actually grown up in that church. And the church that I was at before that, they were making some steps toward becoming more hierarchical and having only male leadership. And that was really stepping on that wound of, you know, as a kid growing up being told, well, you're always going to be under somebody because you're a woman. And it became really, really painful. And I just knew, like, I can't put myself under that again. And so we didn't know where to go. And I think I went with her on Mother's Day. And after that, I asked my husband, like, do you want to just try Karen's church? And he was like, yeah, let's do that. And we have not stopped. oh my gosh. We love it so much.
So you go to Covenant Cumberland Presbyterian Church in Ada, Oklahoma, but for you, it's Karen's church.
Yeah. Yes. But what I didn't know, like I said, she had gone there all growing up, and then she was at different churches for a time, but I didn't realize how that atmosphere of like freedom to think had shaped her as a person. Like, she was able to help people because she lets people be who they are. She doesn't need somebody to think just like her. She doesn't need somebody to believe just like her. There's room, just that space for people to have their own journey with God. And that's, you know, Dewan Mearns, our pastor, that's his song. That is his song every Sunday, is there's room for you here to have your own journey with God, and we'll be with you on it. And even, you know, my friends that are there that haven't been there that long, we get together and we talk, like, we have never been in an atmosphere like this.
So what is that atmosphere like? What does it allow you to do that you haven't been able to find in other settings? What makes it unique?
Well, kind of circling back to what we were talking about with doubt, like, you're allowed to doubt. Doubt isn't scary there. And so when you're not motivated by fear, you can actually, I don't think you can do true thinking until you're not motivated by fear anymore. I don't think you can really think through an issue unless you're not trying to think yourself away from hell, you know?
Wow. Okay. Wow. That's profound, because yeah, if I'm scared, and maybe scared and fear is two different things, but it's hard to think clearly. And any decision, I'm thinking out loud here, any decision made has a sense of urgency.
Yes. Yeah.
But if we're allowed to relax and reflect and ponder and given space and time to do that, then maybe the decision making would be more healthy, more, at least more thought. And if it's a mistake, it's a mistake to own, because if I go, well, I was rushed, or I made this decision out of fear, or I'd made this decision, I said these words, or I didn't say these words because I didn't know what the response would be, or I don't want to go to hell It's different if you've had an opportunity to kind of think it out a little bit. And yeah, I can think of occasions to be like, oh man, that was a bad path I took. However, I own it because I thought that that was the way to go. That was the decision to make. Yeah. It probably comes with age too, though.
Yeah, a lot of things get better as I get older. I feel that. I'm really excited about getting to 40. I feel like that's going to be a lot better.
So the Cumberland Presbyterian Church in Ada, Oklahoma, has allowed you to journey and grow. So what about the folks who haven't had that opportunity? You know, what about the other Carissas in the world? Yeah. What advice would you give to them if they happen to come across this podcast and they weren't too fearful of going into hell to listen to it? What advice would you give them?
So this is actually a really, this is a question that's really dear to me because I do have friends who are kind of starting this journey in their own churches that aren't the same kind of environment. And I think maybe just ask the Lord to put, to just start with a person or a couple people who are maybe not in the same church with you, but just somebody that you can get in community with that's safe, that is not going to make you think like them, that will trust God with you, that will say, I trust God to walk with you, so I don't need to control your process. And ask him to give you community and ask him to really show you that he's with you in the process. And I think people can make it through that. I think people can make it through that transition, even if they're in a church that could be a little bit safer to do that.
So you're in seminary now.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to do when you're finished with seminary? What do you think that ministry is going to look like? And you're not held to your answer because things change.
Yeah.
But, you know, ideally, if you had that ability and in many ways that you do, what will that ministry shape? You know, what shape will the ministry take after you get done with seminary?
You know, I have thought about this a lot, and I honestly could see it going a few directions because I love one-on-one conversations a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Just conversations that I have right now. I love walking through process with people one-on-one, but I also really love teaching settings. Dewan has been just super supportive, and I've had the opportunity to teach in Sunday school and teach some Wednesday night. On Wednesday I taught a contemplative practice for Lent. So I love that too. So I'm still kind of in the process of feeling out like what's even available, you know, like what kinds of what kinds of things would even be available for me. I think I joked with you earlier. I have this sticker that says, I have no idea what I'm doing, but I'm doing it for the Lord. And that's honestly how I feel. I've gotten real comfy with uncertainty. And so I'm really okay. I'm okay not knowing exactly what I'm going to do and knowing that I'm in the right process, and I'm okay with being in the right process, even if I don't know exactly what it will look like.
I want to go back just a little bit. So I imagine that your change away from a more controlling fundamentalist environment, those are my words, not yours. And then you had this opportunity to look at faith differently, look at the world differently. I mean, were there moments of like where you just watched any movie that you wanted to and you just poured pure sugar in your mouth and, you know, just that, were there moments of rebellion or was it more gradual or what? What did that look like?
I don't know that there were moments where I don't think there were moments where I'm like, I'm just going to like get it all out right now. But there, I definitely saw a change in my mind of like, okay, I don't think that, you know, this kind of movie is as bad for me as they're saying it is. And so like I would watch and maybe watch some more, and then just naturally I'd be like, eh, I don't really feel that great when I watch that movie. Mm-hmm. And so just kind of, so like maybe a little bit, I mean, I definitely did things that neither IBLP teachings nor my dad specifically would probably think were that great, but it was almost, there was a lot of like, it's just self-regulation. Like if you're not motivated by fear anymore, then you can really start to listen to like, what does my spirit actually want? Like my spirit doesn't want to, you know, watch something that just makes me terrified all the time. For instance, I'll never watch like a horror movie would never be like appealing to me. I'd never be like, well, that's going to send you to hell if you watch a horror movie. But at the same time, I think I just started to learn to just trust myself and not be led by a lot of rules in general, and just kind of trust that the spirit of God within me can direct me pretty well.
And being able to discern what we think we need at that time, you know, and mm-hmm. there's a difference between yeah. like need and want, you know, what do I need to help get me through this day? You know, what do I need when I'm looking at entertainment? You know, what do I expect from my, you know, something that's intended to be fun, you know, but what is my threshold on what that means? Yeah. I think that comes with adulthood as well, but also as we mature in the faith. So with that in mind, what kind of books, what kind of music are you listening to? What kind of movies in your life that are speaking to you now? They can be something that you watched or read a time back, but something that has spoken to you that you would recommend.
Let's see. So books, I am a reader. I love reading. Peter Enns wrote this book called The Sin of Certainty. And that book saved my life. I think I've used saved my life a lot during this podcast.
You've been saved really, a lot.
Yeah, I have. I really have. But it, just reading it, I think I can even imagine him having those same patterns of fear that I have. And then just in such a scholarly way, like walks you out of that. Like you don't have to be sure about everything. It's okay to have some doubts. It's okay to rethink some things. And the way that he frames it, both biblically and historically, are just amazing. So that's a great book. This is an old one. I missed this one the first go around, though, because the circle that I was in said it was heretical. But The Shack, and actually one of my seminary professors recommended it to me when I first started going through this. But, you know, I kind of said I had these moments where I knew that I identified the Holy Spirit as the one who was bringing me this information that I really, really needed. So I remember talking to him and I said, I really feel like the Holy Spirit is really good, but I don't know about God. I don't know about God the Father. And so he asked the question, but so he recommended The Shack to me, and that book messed me up. it did. I was crying for like 3 days. Like, you actually are good. but it was,
I don't think I've heard anybody say that The Shack has messed them up.
Oh my gosh.
That's pretty funny.
I was a mess. But he just is so good at showing how, you know, the Trinity, they're all the same. Like if you have felt the goodness of one of them, you can know the goodness of all of them. Let's see, another book. I had another one that I was thinking about. That's it. Oh, it's a Rob Bell book. And I think it's What is the Bible by Rob Bell. And I was you know, like I said, I had gotten to this point where I was like, I don't know if I like the Old Testament God very much. when I read that book, he had such a different way of reading the Bible. And that was one of those things that I needed. I only knew one way of reading the Bible, and he gave me another way to read the Bible, and I needed that.
Hmm.
So those three. Also, in terms of things to watch, this isn't necessarily like a specific recommendation, but I have really gotten into like historical series. And I think it's because the conditions were so horrible, like so, so bad, like just barbaric times. And when I think about the process of God making all things new, I think that makes it real to me because I can see in real time, oh, like humanity was horrific and we've already come this far and we can even come farther because he's always saving everything. Like he's making everything new. And so those, even though they're really dark to watch, they're somehow really encouraging to me. So, yeah. I know it's kind of off the wall, but.
How about music? You said that growing up, your family was musically inclined. For pleasure and not for church or anything like that. Because you play in the church band, right? Or sing or participate? Or
Yeah, I sing and play piano every once in a while.
What kind of music do you like more for pleasure? Or is it the same?
Actually, I told somebody, I missed out on all pop culture. Just all of it. Just got none of it. So I'm discovering bands that probably everybody's known about for forever. But the 1975, I cannot stop listening to the 1975. And I am a little bit obsessive. So I'm kind of just stuck on them right now and haven't discovered that many more. But I'm sure I will.
Well, thank you so much, Carissa, for opening up the doors to your life and walking me through a space that I am unfamiliar with, you know, an experience that is new to me, and for bearing it all. And I'm excited for your seminary experience and what ministry will look like for you in the coming months.
Well, thank you. I had a great time.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Cumberland Road. In closing, I leave with you the words from author and Episcopal Bishop John Shelby Spall. Those whose religious security is rooted in a literal Bible do not want that security disturbed. They are not happy when facts challenge their biblical understanding, or when nuances in the text are introduced, or when they are forced to deal with either contradictions or changing insights. The Bible, as they understand it, shares in the permanence and certainty of God and convinces them that they are right and justifies the enormous fear and even negativity that lies so close to the surface and fundamentalistic religion. For biblical literalists, there is always an enemy to be defeated in mortal combat. Thanks for listening.